Welcome to Rebel Health Radio, bringing the best in alternative and integrative medicine to your ears.
Right, I'm just going to share my screen. Okay. And go to the end. All right. Here we are. So this is the April community session, and it's our discussion group as ever. I've got about 4 to 6 slides. I've probably got, about 6 probably here. And we're just going to go through, and then obviously questions and discussion, which is not recorded. So so a little summary, first of all, of what we did last session. So we looked at anxiety as a conditioned response. And in particular, we looked at attachment wounding, which is kind of the bonding with caregivers when it doesn't work that well or it becomes insecure. It adds to an already sensitized nervous system to create states of anxiety. It's the most common form of trauma that I see is this attachment wounding, or sometimes also called relational trauma. And it's exceedingly common. There are so many ways in which bonding can be interrupted. And this kind of anxiety response becomes a habit where uncertainty is present. And there's certainly many, many different ways in which uncertainty presents itself in life, isn't it? Well, you know, being ill is uncertain, and maybe relationships are uncertain, and sometimes our finances are uncertain. So our brains will default to this negative bias that brains unfortunately have. They find it easier to detect threat than they do safety. And it creates anxiety, therefore, as a default or habitual response. And this then becomes conditioned. In other words, it becomes something that happens by default without you having to think about it. It's sort of cause and effect to any difficulty or challenge in life. And because it's unconscious, it's also unquestioned. You know, you don't necessarily know you're doing it. And self-sustaining, you get into this anxiety loop where it just becomes the habit. Now, anxiety itself is a complex interplay of different brain areas and inputs. And I just wanted to go through that in more detail. And I'm going to cover a few of the different brain areas, and I want to be careful not to overwhelm you here. So I've created an animation which hopefully will take you through the different areas in sequence. And here, this is a slice through the brain, and this part here is the limbic brain. So it's the central part. It's also sometimes called the emotional brain. And it's really important to functioning, but it's not that well known. We tend to think of the brain as the thinking brain or the cortex. And these two parts here, the cerebellum and the brainstem, they are very evolutionarily, they're very ancient. And the cerebellum, I'm not going to come back to. It's largely to do with movement. And in fact, disorders or problems in this area can create disease of movement. So, for instance, Parkinson's disease, you get a tremor when this part isn't working. And the brainstem is really about basic functions, about eating, defecation, sleeping, those sorts of things. So if that part of the brain goes wrong, your basic functions fail to work properly, and you may have digestive issues, or you just find sleep really difficult. And it's a very early arising part of your brain. So it comes online even before you're born, but it's certainly online by the time you're born, and it allows suckling and things like that. And then we've got other parts of the limbic brain. I'm going to now go through these, and I'm going to show you what happens in terms of sensitivity and or trauma, because they can combine to create a sensory stimulus sensitivity. So and I color coded it green and red because I felt that was the most obvious way, where, you know, green for go, red for stop. One is enhanced and the other is sort of slowed down or shut down. And so the thalamus, which is right in the middle, that's where we're going to start. This sort of egg-shaped area is the gatekeeper, really. It's where all your sensory information is sifted For relevance, you know, and so this part of the brain needs to determine whether something is a problem or not, and whether it needs to pay attention. So it's all about relevance. And you can imagine if that part of the brain is shut down or slowed down, then you're not going to know if something's relevant, particularly. You're going to fail to make that judgment well. And then we've got the hippocampus, which is right at the base of the limbic area, and it's so cool because it's meant to look like a seahorse. And that's more the watchtower or the context stamp. It sort of gives it a stamp of this is happening at this time and this place because of this. And it's also very linked with memory. And so if that goes offline, you really are without context for your experience. So you can imagine that's going to be a huge issue. And then we come to the right at the tip of that hippocampal area is the amygdala, so called because it's supposed to look like an almond, and amygdala is Latin for almond. And this is the smoke alarm, and this is about attention, in particular, attention to threat, sometimes also called the fear center. But it's really about what the brain is expecting. And so it's looking at fear signals. It's trying to determine whether there's something in the environment that needs to be reacted to. And guess what? That section is actually enhanced. So you can imagine you're going to feel more fear. You're going to react quicker to it because you've got a more sort of trigger happy smoke alarm. And then there's a part of the brain that not many people consider part of the limbic system, but I believe it's an interface. Is the area just in front of it or behind the eyes, actually, and it's called the prefrontal cortex. And this is the experience simulator where you do your analysis and reflection, where you kind of make a decision. Is that something that I need to panic about? Is it the snake or the stick? It can also allow you to imagine situations. And so you kind of simulate experience as well. And if that goes offline, which it does to some extent, you're not able to integrate your experience in a way that allows you to analyze it properly, and you're just reacting. And then there's this sort of U-shaped area underneath the thalamus called the hypothalamus. Hypo means under. And that's another important part because it's the beginning, it's the sort of part of your brain that responds to stress. It's the first part of what's called your HPA axis, your hypothalamus, pituitary, and adrenal axis, which is a really complex interplay of hormones and neurotransmitters that run in sequence and have feedback loops. And it's the beginning of how your body responds to stress. So, and it all starts here, and that is enhanced. So you can imagine you're going to have a higher stress response when you pick up higher fear signals, and then you're going to have less context and less ability to reflect and analyze it. And then the final part I wanted to talk about, which is seldom talked about, is the insula. And the insula is your relay station where you do your sensory processing. It's also apparently the site of empathy and the site of disgust, we've just found out, both digestive, you know, eating bad food, but also emotional feelings of disgust. And so this area being shut down makes it really difficult for us to process our emotions and feelings and pass them on. And so whilst we may have high empathy, we're unable to process that in a way that's healthy for us. And so we overfeel and underprocess. And you can imagine this is the way highly sensitive brains work. And so honoring your nervous system is all about understanding that the nervous system is the interface between you and the world, right? It's taking everything in. It's constantly interpreting stimuli, whether that's sight or sounds or touch. And then it's matching it to what it already knows about the world. So the brain is pattern matching to what it already knows. And so it's not necessarily a realistic assessment of what's going on. There's not this reality that it's picking up. It's an interpretation of the world. And if you are highly sensitive, as we've seen, your brain is likely to overestimate danger. And so in honoring this, you need to kind of, first of all, know where you are on that scale. And I, if you haven't done it before, I would recommend the HSP test, which is available for free on Elaine Aron's site. I think hers is highlysensitiveperson.com. And then there's also this highlysensitive.com, which is a UK-based site. And then listening to Judith Orloff's audios on empaths, which is what she calls adult highly sensitives. I think that will give you a lot of information maybe that will help you honour your trait much more. You know, we need to have a life that has good boundaries, because for many of us, we don't really know where we start and where another person ends. You know, we are porous in that respect. And we're going to need good support from other people, particularly other highly sensitive people who kind of understand us and don't humiliate us for the way we are. And so making sure everyone that loves you or cares about you knows about this and appreciates this special sensitivity and understands that it's not made up, it is real. And science is now pointing to that, I think, very clearly. And then I just wanted to come on to how this manifests in practical terms. How does it show up in your life? Now, this isn't by any means an exhaustive account, but here are the main ones that I see over and over again with my clients. Difficulties with change and loss, whether that's loss of a person or loss of identity or a change in circumstance in some way. And anxiety about being away from home or in new surroundings, you know. I've had this all my life, you know, going on holiday, whilst really exciting, is always really stressful for me. And I never sleep in the first night somewhere else, somewhere different. And I just have to accept that about myself. It's just the way I am. And then there's a social anxiety, whether that's a fear of public speaking or just being in public, you know, being judged in public, being in the limelight in some way. We're often the ones that kind of shrink away and go outside of the group, don't we, or on the edge of the group. And understanding that nervous system can actually shut down entirely where you can't speak up. We actually saw that in the discussion. You know, many people have had that experience where you just can't say anything. And I've certainly, you know, been very reticent to speak up in groups. And then there's being highly offended or defensive when criticized. When someone says something about you that's critical, or you feel you've failed in some way and you've gone against your own values or your own beliefs about yourself, you know, this is cutting you with a knife. It's really hard to process that. And you'll obsess about it as well. And finally, being highly sensitive to your environment. So the smells, sights, sounds and touch, and that can be in many, many different ways. And I'll be covering that in my talk for the Chrysalis Effect on the 17th of May, which will be available for people if you're a member in the members area. But I will remind you next time as well. And so breaking the cycle, this anxiety cycle, you know, getting out of fear is a practice. It's not a quick fix. There's no one thing that you need to do or that's going to work immediately for everybody. It's about doing lots of different things that keep repeating. And it's particularly hard to get out of fear if you have this high processing sensitivity, this HSP trait, isn't it? Because we're reacting more strongly than other people. But don't forget, it's a personality trait. It's not a disease. It's genetically driven and hardwired, and it's present from birth, actually. It makes you more responsive to stimuli, both good and bad. I mean, we've talked a lot about the bad side, but there are good things about this. There are advantages. You know, you feel the depth of things. You feel the beauty and the passion of things much more than other people do. So everything goes very deep. So we must have soothing practices in the life, you know, regular routines that we stick to, particularly self-care routines, whether that's meditation or walking or being in nature. It's really important for us to get outdoors as well because of the vitamin D connection, which is really strong with actually self-regulating and feeling mentally strong. And deep connections with others who care about you. And it's really about quality here, not quantity. We don't need hundreds of friends. We just need a few that really care and that make us feel good about ourselves And of course, others for whom we care, you know. So getting out of our own heads and into caring for others is often a good thing. See, humans are interpersonal creatures, you know. That's how we create meaning. It's not through how much money you accumulate or how much status or the power you have or the accolades in life. It's actually about good interpersonal connection. And I will include that link as well in the email. That's all about vitamin D and how important that is. And we're just coming into the period now where vitamin D will be made in our skin. But we have come through winter, so we'll all be very low. And so my final slide is about a life lived well. And this is all about connection, contribution, and authenticity. And understanding those three things are just so key. Many of us are in our heads too much. You know, we overthink things. We need to get into our hearts where true knowing actually resides, knowing who we are, knowing what we want. We have to get into our heart. And not seeing recovery as a project, you know, I should have put the word not here, but recovery as a project means we're thinking it. We're into our head, not our heart. And you will not get well. You will not find peace in that way. You have to get into allowing, not pushing. So finding something that gives you meaning and purpose and having a loving intent, you know, just little things really matter here. You might not have the answer to everything, you know, what you want to be or do, but focus on what you can do now as opposed to what you can't. You know, we live in a society where comparison is just everywhere, you know, whether there's people that earn more money than you or seem happier than you or seem healthier than you, you know, that kind of comparison is going to only make you feel worse. And so finding a focus for what you can achieve and what matters to you is really key. And so even if you don't have the answer to what your unique purpose is, you know, what can you achieve or be now that makes you feel good? You know, you'll come into your idea of unique purpose when you follow your heart. And so just dates for your diaries then. Next community session is Wednesday, the 3rd of May. It's always the first Wednesday of the month. And don't forget the 17th of May for those of you who are in the Chrysalis Effect and want to join me there for a live presentation, which will be recorded, however, so you'll also be able to go to it there. Thank you so much. Don't forget, I've got blogs and videos on my YouTube channel on high sensitivity. You can also see my book, The Scarlet Won't Heal, and the courses Thrive and the Emotional Audit Program, now available as a self-directed program. And you can work with me or follow the Emotional Masterclass, which is a combination of one-to-one support and emotional audit access. So happy to talk to anybody. Please, if you are interested and you think anyone else might be interested, please share any of this information. We need to stick together. Thank you so much. Take care, everybody.
Hey, hope you enjoyed listening to Rebel Health Radio. Do subscribe and look forward to catching you soon.